Welcome to the Breakthrough Success Podcast, helping you achieve that breakthrough you've always been looking for in your business. And now your host, Mark Gubertzi.
Hello and welcome. I am your host, Mark Gubertzi, and this is the podcast for marketers and small business owners who are looking for the breakthrough for their businesses. I am very excited about this show. We are going to take a deep dive into copywriting with our guest, Ray Edwards. Ray is widely regarded as one of the best copywriters on the planet. He's had clients like Tony Robbins, Jeff Walker, Michael Hyatt, Jack Canfield, and many others. He's created the Copywriting Academy course, which he has filled up with his deepest and most powerful copywriting secrets. We'll squeeze out some of his copywriting secrets within this episode, and without any further ado, it is my pleasure to welcome Ray to the show.
Thank you, Mark. It's talking to you is kind of like talking to John Lee Dumas, another client of mine. He's so high energy, I feel like I have to crank up my own energy.
I take that as such a big compliment, that I really do.
You two are alike in that you raise the energy of the room that you enter into. That's a great quality to have.
Thank you. So the way I like to start all of my podcasts is I basically like to ask all my guests what got them started in the area that they chose to pursue. So for you, what exactly got you started with copywriting?
Well, the exact thing that got me started was I was a young boy and I went to visit my grandparents on the weekend, and my grandma had a newspaper that she got every week. I thought it was a legitimate newspaper. It was the one with the best stories, and it was the National Enquirer. And in the back of that newspaper were these full-page stories every week that were fascinating. And only later, when I grew up, did I discover those were actually direct response ads written by the legendary Gene Schwartz. That's what exactly got me started.
So you refer to copywriting as one of the world's most valuable skills. Why is that?
Well, when I became a little older than I was just describing, I went into the radio business. I was a disc jockey, and then I became a manager of stations. And I figured out pretty early on that the people who drove the nice cars at the radio stations were not the DJs. They were the salespeople. And I got to know them. I got to hang out with them because I wanted to be valued by them. And I learned that if I could help their clients make money, I would be kept around when other DJs were fired. So I began to learn how to write ads that brought in business for the local business owners. And that's where I learned at a very visceral level that this is the important skill, communicating your value to the world and getting people to understand that value, why it's important to them, why they should give you money for what you have to offer, is the crucial skill in business. If you can't do that, you won't be in business very long. You'll be out of business. That's why it's the most important skill.
So going through your Copywriting Academy course, I mean, there are so many things you have to do the preparation work in order to write great copy. So that initial preparation basically allows you to create those compelling stories. So when you're writing copy, whether it's for you or for a client, what is the preparation that you put in advance?
There are two subjects you have to be exhaustively knowledgeable about. The first subject is the person you're writing to, the customer. Who is the customer? So if I'm writing for a client or for myself, I'm going to dig as deep as I can into the well of who is the person whose problem we are solving. And I mean, I go to as much detail as I can get into. I have a friend who does what he calls the instant empathy exercise. And before he writes, he's already done his demographic homework. He knows like the average age, the average income, the socioeconomic standing of the person to whom he's writing. But then he sits down and closes his eyes and begins to imagine, and I do the same thing, imagine the day in the life of that client, of that customer. What is it like when they wake up in the morning? Is their house noisy or is it quiet? Is it filled with kids or are they alone? What does it smell like? What does it look like? What kind of furniture do they have? What do they have for breakfast? What's their morning routine like? What's their drive to work like? Do they go to work? Are they unemployed? Imagining every small detail of their day from the beginning to the end, and only then beginning to write, because then you're writing from a place of living their life as close as you can get to it. And then the second exhaustive base of knowledge you have to have is about the product. I remember one client was shocked when I had written basically more notes about his product than there was content in the product itself. And that kind of exhaustive examination of the product that you're writing about gives you angles and stories to tell about the product itself and what it can do that the actual creator of the product may have never thought of. There's a story about Eugene Schwartz, whom I referenced earlier. He used to write copy for books, and he would often get confronted by the editors of the books saying, you can't put this in the copy where it says that if I read this book and I rub this part of my belly, it'll make my back pain go away, because that's just not true. It's not in the book. And Gene would say, well, but it is in the book, because I read on page 37 that this principle was true. I read on page 142 that this principle was true. And on page 213, it says this principle is true. And if all three of those are true, that means that if you rub that specific spot on your belly, it'll get rid of back pain. And they couldn't controvert him because he was correct. But he knew the product. He knew the book better than the author themselves. So those are the two things you have to know, the person you're writing to and the actual product you're writing about. And rarely, Mark, do any copywriters go that deep into their knowledge, even of their own product and their own customers.
So you emphasize in any form of copy, regardless of how the copy is being distributed, knowing the person reading the copy and knowing your product are important. And within our online world, out of all the platforms, email marketing has the greatest ROI. So in addition to knowing the person you're writing for and the product that you're offering, how else do you write emails that convert?
Well, the first and most important principle is to think about what environment, what context will the emails be read in? What state will the person be in who opens the email or who sees the subject line of the email if they ever open it? They're probably going to be at work or looking at their phone or their tablet, depending on who they are, what age they are, what their habits are. You can know many of these things in today's online world. I mean, we know that a certain percentage of our viewers of our pages are mobile viewers. More and more, they're mobile. That means a tablet or a phone or the infamous phablet, the combination of tablet and phone. You have to know what the environment and what the state of mind is and what their level of skepticism, how open are they to your message. All those things come together, converge into an opening or a closure of their willingness to hear your message. And so once you figured out what state they're in, then you know how to write to them about whatever it is whatever message it is you're trying to convey. Secondly, your email needs to look like an email they would get from a friend. It does not need to look like an ad. This is a huge mistake people make. They make their email look like a magazine ad. Well, when I see that kind of, let me just ask you, Mark, when you see that kind of email in your inbox, what's your first response?
Skip to the next one.
Yeah, or hit the delete button because it's probably spam, probably something you're not interested in. The most level of interest I might have in that is if it's a coupon from a store that I do business with regularly. So if it's REI and there's a coupon that I can save some money, I might file it away, but I probably won't read it right that moment. So your email should look like the emails you get from your friends. Take a look at the emails you get from actual human beings sometime and see if you can make your marketing emails look like, I mean, physically, the margins, the color of the background, the color of the text, the font, it should look like that kind of email. That way it has a much higher chance of getting read. And then we get to the content and you need to write like a friend would write to a friend. Friends don't write to friends in corporate speak. We write in everyday conversational language, sometimes sentence fragments. Sometimes we don't punctuate correctly. Sometimes we don't use complete sentences. I said that already. So the email is imperfect. It feels human. And sometimes I get emails back from clients that I'm working with or from people who are on my list who will say, well, you misspelled this word and you didn't capitalize the first word in the subject line. And I want to tell them, I don't usually, but I want to tell them, well, I did that on purpose because that looks more like a human being wrote it.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not like we're all perfect. We all make mistakes, and being able to show those mistakes. Now, do you do that in like all the time intentionally, or like?
No, sometimes I actually make a mistake, and then other times it depends on who I'm writing to. Mark, if I'm writing to engineers, for instance, or to English majors, I know I need to have every detail of my email correct. Because those are the kind of people who do not relate well to those kind of inexact mistakes in communication. So if it's an English major or it's an engineer or it's a very scientifically oriented person or anybody who's left brain logically oriented and their profession and their personality depends on the precision of thought and expression of that thought, you have to write appropriately to the audience to whom you're speaking.
So copywriting comes back to storytelling. And one way to tell your story is through a video. I've seen you do several videos to tell people about your products, provide advice, and introduce yourself. So, with video as a method of storytelling in mind, how do videos within your landing pages and sales page copy affect subscriber and sales growth as compared to just having the copy but without videos? How much of a role do they play?
Well, again, a lot of it depends on who your audience is. I'll tell you that when we're marketing copywriting information to people who are interested in copywriting, it's probably not a shock that the highest converting landing pages and the highest converting lead magnets we use are the written ones, because these are writers after all, and writers tend to be readers. So like in our current launch, we've offered several pieces of free content. Three pieces were video, one piece was an ebook. Guess which one converted at the highest rate?
The ebook.
Of course. Yeah, because it's for writers. It was astronomically better converting lead magnet than the videos. Both are important, but you have to keep in mind who you are speaking with, who you're writing to, and how you deliver things. Now, for many launches these days, I would deliver the sales letter only as a video sales letter. But if you're sending a launch sales page to people who are writers and readers, you need to have your sales page not only in video form, we do that, but you also need to have it written out in text form, because these are, again, people who love to deal with text. Now, one generalization I will make is, overall, most of the time, a landing page, that is a page that is designed to get their email address in exchange for valuable information or a gift, a landing page usually converts better if there's no video on the page. So we use something called the fake out video a lot. People click on it, but it doesn't play. They click on it and the opt-in box pops up. It's a flyover window or a light box, however you want to describe that. It just pops up and says, to watch this video, you need to fill in your email or any other information we may be requesting. Those work best. Putting a video that explains the opt-in and explains the landing page's purpose tends to not work as well. I don't know why. I would think it would be the opposite, but that's what we found to be true.
Thank you for providing those insights. I definitely did not think about having the video, and then when someone clicks on it, they got the, oh, you got to enter your email address in order to make that happen. But regardless of what copy you, what platform you use to share your copy, whether you're writing it out, you're using video, you have to build trust within your copy right from the beginning, because people are skeptical in the beginning. So how do you build trust with your copy right from the start?
Well, one way to do it is to offer facts that are incontrovertible or easily checkable. For instance, in our latest version of the sales letter for the Copywriting Academy, I start by saying the U.S. Bureau of Labor and Statistics reports that 70% of businesses will fail, and that 82% of those who fail will do so because of cash flow problems. And I translate that and I say, well, what that means is they ran out of money. Why did they run out of money? Because they didn't know how to market their business. And I also point out that it's not because of the economy that these businesses failed because these statistics hold true over since 1994. So they hold true over several presidencies, several different phases of the economy. The failure rate never really changed. The problem with business is and was the communication of their message to the people who need to buy their product. And so I start with facts that they can easily check. In fact, sometimes we actually put the link to the source material in the actual sales copy itself. In this case, we didn't, but in many cases, especially if it's copy for, say, nutritional supplements or an exercise program, something that is easily documentable by peer-reviewed studies, then we'll put links to those things in the actual text of the copy, because that increases the believability, the credibility of the copy itself. So that's one way to gain trust, is just tell them something they can prove to themselves.
So with those facts, you build trust in the beginning and you get people to read through their copy. They're going through it. But then you got to have that little zinger at the end that entices people to take action and purchase the product that you are offering. So with all of this work put into creating the copy, how do you close it out so people are eager to buy your product?
Well, I did you a disservice. I gave you a shorter answer than I should have. So let's put a pin in that question that you just asked me and go back. I want to zoom out a little bit larger. Even though on the sales letter I'm starting with facts, or some people refer to it as market data, things that people can verify or they already know, even though I'm doing that and that establishes a certain amount of trust in that copy, if you're sending a cold prospect to that copy, it's not really going to do much to gain their trust. All they may say is to themselves is, well, this person knows their facts at least. Gaining trust is something that happens over time. You earn trust. And so that's one of the reasons why, for instance, Jeff Walker's product launch formula works so well, because it takes the marketing of a product and elongates the period of time that you spend with a prospect and telescopes over that period of time a series of communications, a sequence of communications that are designed to let them get to know, like, and trust you through the use of stories, psychological triggers, and more information being released with each communication so that over time they do begin to feel, well, I know this person, I can trust them, they've given me great, informative, helpful, useful, entertaining information before, and so this communication will probably be the same. And so by the time they get to your sales page, they're inclined to trust you already. So it's a matter of pre-framing before you actually get to the ask. The sales page is really an ask, even though it doesn't start with one, it ends with one, as you just pointed out so astutely. So once you've done that sequential messaging over time, usually done through email and video, and then you ultimately end up at the sales letter, then you present a rational chain of logic. You start with the place where they're hurting the most. You start with their pain, describe their problem. You present a rational chain of logic, a rationale that you have the solution and why your solution works. You prove it with case studies, testimonials, and then you point out these are the reasons why you need this. This is how it will help you specifically. And then you, by the time you reach that point in the copy, Mark, you've reached a point where you've earned the right to say, now what you need to do is go ahead and click the button and buy this product. You've enumerated all the benefits that they'll gain from it. You've shown how it will solve the very problem that they've already acknowledged that they have. So why would they not buy the product? And by the way, that leads to a series of questions. Most people call these questions objections, but here's the little secret that I would share with you. They're not really objections. They're not objecting to anything. If they're at your sales page, there's only one reason they are there. It is not because they thought it would be entertaining to watch something they think is BS. It's because they're hoping you have the solution. And the questions that they're asking, far from being objections, are actually a request from them. Please verify that you have the answer that I need because I really want you to. In other words, they're on your side. And all you have to do is realize that and give them the answers that they need, and they will buy from you most of the time.
So I would like to shift gears to a part of your Copywriting Academy course. And at the very beginning of this podcast, I mentioned the clients who asked you to write or tweak their copy. And I noticed you have a bonus section within the Copywriting Academy on making a six-figure income by writing copy for others on a part-time basis. And I know they got a lot more people like just honing in right now because, you know, six figures part-time. I mean, like, Mark and Ray, tell me more. So can you provide us with the cliff notes of how to pursue that side hustle successfully?
The cliff notes version. Okay, first of all, get good at writing copy. Be a good student of writing copy. That's point one. Point two, write a lot of good copy. Point three, in order to write a lot of good copy, you have to write a lot of bad copy. That's how you get to the point of having written a lot of good pieces. Track your results and then begin to attract clients. You need to build a base station, a platform, probably a blog. You need to regularly, I think, blog about the art of copywriting. And the reason you're doing it is not because you're trying to train copywriters, it's because you're trying to train your clients, your potential clients, that you know what you're doing. So you give them advice they can use, you demonstrate your expertise, you show them projects you're working on your blog or in your podcast, and then you set up a lead magnet, something of value you can give to them, maybe a checklist for their advertising or for their copy if they're writing it themselves, or a checklist that they can use to double check on their copywriter. And perhaps, this is how I got started. I did free critiques. I offered to critique people's copy for no charge at all. And the way I would do it, I learned pretty quickly, Mark, and the same thing is true today, is that people make the same six or seven mistakes all the time in their copy. So I had a templated critique already written out. Now, it didn't always apply. They didn't always make all six or seven of the mistakes. So sometimes I had to take three or four of them out, but usually they made most of them. And I just had to fill in specifically in their copy where they were making these mistakes. And the template saved me lots of time. So it would take me, you know, maybe 20 minutes to do a site critique. I would send that back to them. And at the end of every critique, it would say something like this. You can make these changes yourself, because I would recommend to them, this is what I would do if I were you. I wouldn't give them the exact copy. I'd give them a general direction. And then I would say, you can make these changes yourself or have your writer do it. Or if you want to have a pro take care of it, I would be willing to take it on. I'm available for an assignment right now. And here's what the investment would be. And I would give them a price. And I was pretty cheeky. I didn't realize it back then, but this was pretty forward of me. I would give them a price. I would also include an agreement and an invoice. And so a friend of mine says, well, here's how you know who your clients are. You invoice everybody, and whoever pays you, that's your clients.
And did you ever use Upwork to find clients? Would you recommend that to anyone, or would you just say look at the people in your niche?
Okay, the answers to those three questions in order are no, no, and yes. No, I never used Upwork. No, I would not recommend using it because I understand a lot of people do make a living there, and I don't want to make them feel bad, but there's a lot of bottom feeding that goes on at Upwork. And so you're finding work, perhaps, but you're finding people who want to pay the lowest possible price. That's what they're looking for. And you have to ask yourself, is that really who I want as a client? And I would look within the niche that you want to specialize in. I think it's a great place to look. In fact, I think the best place to find clients, Mark, is actually think about this. Who's a qualified client for you as a copywriter? Is somebody who already knows the value of copywriting, so you don't have to sell them on the concept. That's number one. Number two, somebody who has demonstrated a willingness to invest money in improving or growing their business. Number three, somebody you can easily contact. So where would you find such creatures? Well, if you go to conventions that are designed to help people grow their business or seminars or workshops, you will find entrepreneurs who have a business, who understand the value of marketing and copywriting because they're at a convention that's about that subject, even tangentially. And they've demonstrated that they're willing to spend money to grow their business because how else did they get there if they didn't invest money? And they're easily accessible because you're at the same conference. That is how I grew my business exponentially in the early days because I went to conferences and I did what I just told you. I offered critiques, only I offered them face to face. They would tell me about their website. I would say, well, let's pull it up and take a look at it. And I'd give them some advice. And oftentimes, I never asked a closing question there, but often they would ask me the closing question. They would say, well, what would it cost to have you work on this for me? And boom, I had a client.
Wow. So you went out, did all the networking, and that's how it basically began.
As my grandfather used to say, you fish where the fish are.
Well, you mentioned earlier that copywriting is the most valuable skill in the world, but some people, they look at copywriting and they think it takes so much time to craft effective copy. And even the people who are copywriting for several hours in a given week or even in a given day, they want to obviously write copy faster. I feel like everyone wants to be more efficient at what they're doing. So how do you recommend speeding up the copywriting process?
Well, there's two recommendations I would make, and I go into a lot of detail about these in the course, but I'll give you the short CliffsNotes versions. First of all, I would recommend not writing copy, but speaking the copy. You can speak a lot faster than you can type. Even if you're the world's fastest typist, you could probably speak faster. The average American speaks at about anywhere from 125 to 150 words per minute. You can't type that fast, not legibly anyway. Most people can't. I don't know of any person who can. Probably there are a few savants in the world who can, but for most of us, it's not true. So you can dictate. There are many great services now. You can use Dragon. You can use built-in dictation software that comes with your computer. You can use a service like Rev, R-E-V, as in Ray Edwards Victor.com. I actually have nothing to do with that company, but I wish I did because they make a fortune and they do a great job with transcriptions. Another source for getting transcriptions done very inexpensively, less expensively than Rev, is a place called gotranscripts.com. And so speaking the copy out, you make a brief outline of the framework of your copy, which you've alluded to. I have a framework for writing copy. It's in the course. It's very simple. You can find it on my website. Just go to my website and type in P-A-S-T-O-R framework, and you'll find an article about it. And so you speak your copy out according to that framework, and then you have it transcribed and you've got your first draft of your copy. That's one way to speed it up. The other way to speed up writing copy is to start to develop a bank. There are certain pieces of copy that you're going to use over and over again that are very similar from project to project. The opening copy, the lead, the offer section, the guarantee section, the summing it all up section, the closing section. There are just a few variations, even for copywriters who write from scratch every time. If you read enough of their work, you begin to notice, well, he kind of says the same thing every time he writes a letter. So you begin to assemble your own collection of those chunks of your own writing, and then it becomes a matter of not writing the copy, but of assembling the right pieces and then filling in the details. And that's another way to speed up the writing of copy.
At this point of every episode, I want to leave listeners as motivated as possible. So I like to ask different questions concerning you as the individual. So I start this part by asking, what is one big challenge you have faced in your life, and how did you overcome it?
Well, I would say the big challenge probably is the one that I'm facing right now, if I'm really transparent about it. I have, about 5 years ago, was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. And it's a challenge. If you want to know what that is, just Google Michael J. Fox and you'll find the Fox Foundation website. It's the disease that he has, only he's had it a lot longer than me. And so it is challenging. How did I overcome it? I overcome it every single day. And I believe this is how people overcome any challenge, whether it's physical, mental, relational, financial. It doesn't matter. We're all carrying some kind of challenge that we deal with. And the way you overcome it is you don't let the challenge define you. You let your actions define you. And you it's been said, it's a kind of a cliche, but it's true. You don't control the wind, but you can control the direction of your sails. So you just got to figure, okay, this has happened. Now, how do I get around it, get through it, use it to my advantage? How do I continue my work? How do I achieve my goal despite it or even because of it? There's a great book called The Obstacle is the Way. And I highly recommend it. Google it. You'll find it for it's $10. It's well worth the read. And it's about not looking at our obstacles in life or our challenges in life as problems to be avoided, but looking at them as potentially the very source of the kind of strength, resourcefulness, and reserves from inside ourselves that we need to accomplish those big goals that we set.
So you've learned a lot of lessons along your journey. Definitely fighting Parkinson's disease has taught you a lot of great lessons. But what is the best lesson that you have learned on your journey that you really feel that Breakthrough Success listeners need to take away from this episode?
Well, it's going to sound cliche because your listeners have probably heard it many, many times, but I heard it first on a cassette tape back in the 90s.
What are those?
Yeah, exactly. It was a cassette tape by Tony Robbins, and it was the first time I ever heard him say, this was way back when even his voice sounded young. But he said, your past does not equal your future. And for me, that's a transformative piece of wisdom that I've learned, and I would carry it forward. There's one other lesson that I've learned, and that one I learned from the great Earl Nightingale, who was before my time, before probably anybody's time listening to this. But he was really the father of the self-improvement movement. He was the first motivational speaker before there was even a word for those kinds of people. But he said that the best definition of success he ever heard was the progressive realization of a worthy ideal. And when I first heard that, I realized, well, that means I don't have to wait to be successful. I'm successful right now if I'm progressing toward a worthy ideal. You get to define what the worthy ideal is. Nobody can define that for you. But once you figure out, well, this is the ideal I'm striving toward, if you make even a little baby step of progress toward it today, you're a success. And how do you be successful tomorrow? You make a little more progress or a lot of progress. But the amount of progress is up to you. Some progress toward a worthy ideal makes you successful.
Those are some really great insights. I greatly appreciate you taking the time to share them. I do agree. I've heard a lot, your past is your past and your future is up to you to write. The one from Earl, though, that's something I haven't really heard, maybe ever. So I'm really grateful that you offered that tidbit to Breakthrough Success listeners.
Well, you're quite welcome. And if you are intrigued by that, I would recommend looking up a recording called The Strangest Secret, which was something that made Earl Nightingale famous. It was a spoken word piece that at the time was the first spoken word piece to sell 1 million copies ever. This was back when they sold them on tape or on record albums. And it's well worth listening to. It's just as applicable today as it was back decades ago.
All right. What I like to ask all of my guests before I give them the opportunity to say all the places where they can find you on the web is I want to ask, what are 3 books you can think of right now that you would recommend to Breakthrough Success listeners?
Well, specifically in the area of copywriting, I would recommend a book called Tribes by Seth Godin. I would recommend another book called The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield, and I would recommend a book called Breakthrough Advertising by Eugene Schwartz. If I could only buy one book on copywriting, it would probably be my book, but the second book I would buy...
It's a really good book, though.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. Seriously, I wrote my book, so I probably wouldn't buy that one. I would buy Eugene Schwartz's book, which is called Breakthrough Advertising. The language is kind of dated, Mark. I have to tell you, it comes from the 60s, so it sounds like it was written in the 60s, but the insights are timeless.
I've read Tribes. I'm a big Seth Godin fan, so I'm really happy you mentioned that. I recently read War of Art. That one's really good. I have to get into that third book, though. I have not read that one yet. And also The Obstacle is the Way. So I've got two great books that I could now read. Thanks, Ray.
You're quite welcome. And don't get me started on books. I could give you 100.
Well, I know we don't have a lot of time left. So right now, I'm just very appreciative of you taking the time to stop by. I just want to give you the floor right now and let all Breakthrough Success listeners know where they can find Ray Edwards on the web.
Well, the best place is at my main website, which is rayedwards.com, and you can find my podcast and other free resources there. Lots of free stuff, information that can help you grow your business and make your life better. I'm pretty much Ray Edwards at every place on the web, you know, at Ray Edwards on Twitter, Ray Edwards on Facebook. And then you probably have a link available for your listeners that you'll give them to the course that you mentioned earlier, Copywriting Academy. If you're at all interested in writing copy that sells without being pushy or sleazy or salesy, this is a course that I think you really want to take a look at. And right now, you have the opportunity to pick up some free training that can help you decide, is this course for me or not? We've got an ebook, which I mentioned earlier. It's a lead magnet we're using in our launch, and it's called the $2 Billion Sales Letter You've Never Heard Of. So I would recommend people get their hands on that. We've got a 3-video training series, and you'll have the link for them for all that. I would recommend they start there. That'd be a good place to get information they can use, put to work, make some money with, and decide if they want to go deeper and have a longer lasting training relationship with me and my company.
Ray, it has been such a pleasure to have you on my podcast. All of those links you mentioned will be in the show notes of this episode.
Well, the pleasure is mine, Mark. I admire what you do, and I love your energy level, and keep it up. You're doing good work.
Thank you, Ray. I thoroughly enjoyed that interview. Ray is truly a sensation when it comes to copywriting, and his Copywriting Academy is the best copywriting course I have ever gone through. Copywriting is the most important skill for increasing sales because copywriting requires that you keep your customers' experience in mind. A better understanding of your customers will allow you to create better products that your customers will love and get a lot more sales for you in the process. If you forgot to take notes, then don't worry. We've got you covered with the show notes. Visit markgabirdi.com/E32 for those. You can ask your questions over there, which I'll be more than happy to answer. To never miss an episode, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on whatever player you are using. If you are a regular listener and haven't done so already, I would greatly appreciate it if you could give this podcast a review or a rating. Two ways you could do this are through markgabirdi.com/iTunes or markgabirdi.com/Stitcher. That ends this episode. Don't forget, dream big, achieve greatness, and unlock your potential today. How does over 100 retweets per day sound to you? My free ebook, 27 Ways to Get More Retweets on Twitter, has you covered. I use the methods within this ebook to get over 10,000 retweets every single quarter. To learn more and get access to this free resource, visit markgabirdi.com/retweet. This podcast is a production done by Mark Gabirdi. For more insights, head on over to markgabirdi.com.